Chapter 53, Near Springfield, Illinois. Aata had often dreamed about the greatest day of his life, when he killed 3 attacking boars in a matter of minutes with just his spear and a long knife. It was early January, and the rains had pelted southwestern Tahiti for weeks, even burying one small village under a mountain of mud that slid down off the mountain that had sheltered the people for generations. When the skies cleared, Aata chose 2 young men to accompany him into the hills to search for boar. They had been eating only fish and bread for weeks, and the village's storehouse of dried meat had long been empty. A warrior required smoked meat for energy and strength, and even the children seemed thinner and sicklier since wild pig meat disappeared from their plates. Aata was an experienced hunter, who had brought many wild boars to the cooking pits, but his 2 companions were new to the hunt and required instruction. "Te Pua'a is strong as he is smart," he said as they hiked up the trail that wound up into the thickly forested hills that surrounded the village. "He can run as fast as a horse, jump the height of a man, and his tusks are as long as your hand. He weighs more than you, and he can smell you from across the mountain." He looked into the eyes of the 2 men and was pleased to see an appropriate mix of fear and respect. "This time of year, you must thrust your spear into his side, not into his chest, as you would do most of the time. You will not pierce his chest." "Why?" asked the men in unison as they rounded a bend in the trail and began to navigate a field of boulders that had been loosened in the rains and rolled down the mountain. "This is the mating season," Aata answered. "It lasts for 3 months, and in preparation, the male Pua'a develops a thick coat of armor under the skin of his breast. He needs the protection, because when he comes upon a group of sows, he will probably have to fight 1 or more rivals for their affection."
"Males do not live among sows and young ones?" one of the hunters asked.
"They live alone most of the year. When their testicles swell to 3 times their normal size and begin to secrete a thick, foamy liquid that smells like the gates of hell, they know it is time to find a female."
"Just one, after all that time alone?" asked the other hunter with a chuckle.
Aata slowed and turned on the narrow trail. "He will mount as many as 10 sows, and at least 1/2 of them will bear his offspring." The 2 young men looked at each other and laughed.
"So perhaps living a few months alone isn't such a bad thing," said one. "He must go back to his den with quite a smile on his face,
and his body shredded from the tusks of the other males he has fought, and deep bite marks on his ule from some of the sows he has taken." Both men looked down at their crotches and grimaced at the thought of such an encounter. Aata stopped beside a fallen tree that had dried out after the rains and motioned for the others to join him. "Do you see the muddy markings here?" he said, pointing to a wide smear of mud that ran the length of the trunk. "Touch them." His companions ran their fingers along the muddy streaks.
"Well?"
"They are damp, but the rest of the tree is dry," said one of the men.
"A boar has been here in the last hour," Aata replied. "They wallow in mud, and then rub the mud off against trees. The wind is blowing up trail, so he knows we are here."
The young hunters shared worried looks. Talking about the chase for the mighty boar around the village fire was one thing. Coming face to face with the razor-tusked monster, especially one in full romantic rut, was quite another. Aata smiled. A healthy fear was the beginning of wisdom.
"Stay 50 paces behind me and walk side by side on opposite sides of the trail. If I do not kill him with the first thrust, he might run down the trail in your direction. Be patient and wait for him to be almost on you before you strike. His head will be swinging from side to side. It's their way of making sure they get you with at least 1 tusk.
The younger men waited for Aata to take the lead and followed well behind him. It was midday, and the sky was completely clear for the first time in over a month. Small streams cut across the path in many places, and they had to hack through fallen brush several times. Then they stepped around a rock-strewn bend and saw A'ata about 100 feet up the trail, walking stealthily towards a rock outcropping on which a massive male boar was taking his rest. When A'ata was 50 feet from the rock, the boar's head snapped up and turned towards his attacker. The great pig uttered a piercing, high-pitched cry, scrambled down the rock, and charged A'ata, its head down and shoulders hunched, ready to engage. The young hunters froze in place, marveling at how calm A'ata seemed. He stepped to the center of the trail, raised his spear to waist height, and waited. The boar was on him in less than 5 seconds. Just before the pig's slashing tusks ripped into his legs, A'ata leapt to the side of the trail and thrust his spear into the pig's gut, pulled it out, and readied for a second stab. The boar squealed, pulled to the side, and then righted himself and charged past A'ata down the path towards the two inexperienced hunters, huffing in loud bursts with each step he took on his short legs. The men did as A'ata had told them and jumped to separate sides of the path, their spears at the ready, but they did not move quickly enough. In an instant, the 200-pound beast slammed into the first of the young men, just as his bristly head was swinging upwards and caught the unfortunate hunter in the center of his belly. The man lurched backwards, but not before the pig swung his thickly muscled neck to the left and ripped across the hunter's abdomen. The other hunter stabbed at the boar's side, but he did not aim straight, and the spear only creased the animal's thick skin. The boar kept slashing left and right, and the hunter trying to stab the pig in the side watched in horror as his friend's intestines spilled out of his belly and onto the ground. When the dying man collapsed in a pool of his own blood and slippery guts, the pig pulled back and turned his attention on the other hunter. The young man willed his hands to stop trembling and steeled himself for the battle with the infuriated boar. But when the pig was no more than a foot away, a spear flashed from out of nowhere and the pig fell to its side, flailing, kicking, and screaming. A'ata stepped forward, pulled his spear from the pig's side, and stabbed it again and again until he felt the spear go through muscle and sinew and penetrate the animal's heart. The young hunter collapsed to one knee, trying unsuccessfully to suppress the sob welling up from deep inside. He was about to thank A'ata when the older warrior suddenly whipped around and went into his fighting stance, spear at the ready. The young hunter's heart sank. Two large boars appeared from out of the bright morning sun and were hurtling down the path towards he and A'ata.
"But I thought they were solitary creatures who did not travel in packs," the hunter thought as he tried to stop the shivers that were racking his body.
Somehow he managed to raise his spear and begin trotting up the path, just as A'ata leapt into the air above the back of the first boar and shoved his spear into the back of the second boar's neck. The young hunter watched in amazement as A'ata pivoted on the end of his spear around behind the boar before falling to the ground with the spear still in the boar's neck. The second pig turned and rushed towards A'ata, its head almost on the ground so that its tusks could tear A'ata's legs to shreds. A'ata pulled his knife and shot to his knees in the face of the charging boar. When the animal was close enough that he could see the dull yellow luster in its eyes and smell its fetid breath, he gripped the handle of the knife with both hands and thrust it upward with every ounce of his strength. He felt the knife start to penetrate the pig's lower jaw, just as the animal's momentum knocked him off his knees and onto the ground. A'ata was half buried beneath the animal, which was wriggling ferociously to pull its head off the knife. But A'ata kept pushing until he felt the blade pass through the mouth cavity and break through the roof. Now on his side, A'ata summoned his last reservoir of strength and thrust the knife through the top of the boar's mouth and into the animal's brain. He felt the pig shudder, followed by a sickening warmth when its bowels and bladder lost muscle and nerve control and spewed a bucket of foul-smelling waste over the warrior who had vanquished him.
A'ata pulled himself out from under the dead animal and struggled to his feet. He saw the other boar circling the young hunter, looking for an opportunity to rush past the lowered spear and tear the man apart. A'ata gave a great shout, and when the boar turned his head in the direction of the sound, he rushed forward, stepped to the side, and ran his spear all the way through the boar's chest. When the pig crumpled to his front legs, the young hunter shook off his fear and dealt the boar a death blow to the heart. A'ata smiled and walked over to a fallen tree trunk, where he rested his spear and took a seat. A moment later, the young man joined him, and they sat in silence as the sun rose directly overhead. There was mourning and celebration around the fire that night. The young man killed by the great boar was eulogized by friends and family, and then, when the other young hunter stood in front of the assembled villagers and told the story of how the mighty A'ata had killed not one, but three giant, deadly boars, the crowd roared its approval. As for the story of A'ata leaping over one boar and coming down in mid-air on the next animal, with his spear stabbing deep into the beast's neck, and then swinging on the end of the spear over to the side of the trail before letting go and rejoining the battle, the villagers were beside themselves with pride and admiration. The tale of the epic fight quickly spread all the way to Hawaii and beyond. A'ata was the greatest hero since the days of the ancient demigods who once ruled the islands. When the locomotive swung around a grove of oak trees outside Springfield faster than it should have been traveling, the passengers who had been sleeping were jolted awake by the pitching of the cars from left to right and the sounds of dishes falling off tables in the dining car. A'ata was shaken out of his dream and found himself wishing again that he had not accepted Wallace Stafford's offer to pursue Colonel Scoundrel to recover the bank's $50,000. The money Stafford was paying him fully funded the travel expenses for A'ata and the five warriors who accompanied him from Tahiti, and it would have been difficult to find another way to pay for the trip. But he had become so filled with rage in the days and weeks following his humiliating loss in the wrestling match with Scoundrel that he grasped at the first opportunity to take his revenge, without thinking through the longer-term consequences of that fateful decision. He supposed he should have been grateful that Stafford only shrugged when A'ata told him the real reason he wanted to catch up to Scoundrel.
"Kill the man or do not kill the man,"
the banker said, in a matter-of-fact tone.
"I really do not care what becomes of him. But first you must collect my money. Either he has it, or he knows who does."
"And what of your brother's man?" A'ata asked in a slow, measured voice.
He was fluent in his native Tahitian language and in French, but he had only been studying English seriously for a few months.
"Donegan? He should not be a problem for you. My brother and I both want the colonel dead. I simply want a little something extra before the deed is done. Your job is to see to it that no one kills Scoundrel until you collect my cash. After that, the devil may kill him for all I care."
"Donegan may have other plans," A'ata replied.
Wallace blotted at the patch that covered his empty eye socket.
"And you, my well-paid friend, will see that those plans are never put into motion."
A'ata stared at the back of the Pullman car, past his sleeping men, and to the last brushed red velvet seat, where Fitch Donegan sat alone, smoking a cigar and sipping a brandy while he read a Chicago newspaper. Donegan felt A'ata's stare and looked up from the paper. There was no fear or concern in the Irish assassin's eyes, thought A'ata. No worry, no uncertainty, only curiosity. A'ata held his competitor's gaze for a minute and then took a deep drink of whiskey from his hip flask, lowered his head, and went back to sleep.